You're listening to Mom Talk, the online community radio show connecting moms across Canada and around the world. Join Helen, Kara, and Tracy, the parenting team from CanadianParents.com, as they talk all things mom. Mom Talk, a podcast for moms, by moms, because we're all in this together.
Hi, everyone. This is Helen from MomTalk.ca. Dinner time. The mere mention of this phrase can be enough to send shockwaves of horror through many a home on a daily basis. Have you ever found yourself hanging off the fridge door at 5 p.m. wondering what you were going to make for dinner, only to pile the gang into the van and head to a drive-thru? Have no fear, Canada's very own meal planner is here. Sandy Richard is passionate about getting families back to the dinner table. She is well known for her television show Fixing Dinner and is the author of a series of cookbooks called Cooking for the Rush. Sandy joins me today to share the many years of wisdom she has gathered to help us get back to the dinner table, sharing quality time with our families. Welcome, Sandy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, Sandy, I just mentioned your series of cookbooks called Cooking for the Rush, and at this time you have four, but I understand you have a new cookbook coming out in the new year.
Yeah, it's coming out. We're sending it. It goes off by courier Monday.
That is exciting.
It's so exciting. Dinner survival, and I'm using my, you know, they always say this, when you have a place in the public eye, use it to help people, and I'm a little bolder on this one. I'm really getting into, you know, how it really is for the family, and it's tough, man.
It is really tough. Now, I have two children, and actually today is a good example. I had a plan, and the plan didn't happen because I got busy with work. I have two kids and I have a hard time getting dinner on the table. And I know all of your kids aren't at your dinner table right now, but at one point you had seven kids at the table. How did you do that?
Well, and you know, I need to just back up a bit, only because when you said I have two and I can't even do it, a lot of people, you know, say, well, yeah, you've got seven kids. No wonder you had to become a meal planner. But what I need to always stress to people is this: I was falling to pieces when I had two kids. That's when the whole thing started. I was not doing well when I had two children. I was the chicken finger queen. I called myself that because it's the truth. And what was interesting is at the time, women would not admit that they were also having the very same problem. And in fact, we still see that a little bit today. I don't know if it's because we, you know, we are wanting so badly to do it. We didn't visualize this. In particular, women, you know, we didn't visualize this when we were going to have a family, we were going to have kids, we were going to sit down and we were going to, you know, have a good meal and yes, I'm going to be healthy and I'm going to make sure my kids are healthy. So there's this whole guilt thing attached to not doing it. And the only reason I could survive with seven kids, and in fact, I'll clarify that, we were feeding 10 every night because at least two of them had somebody over. We were the only insane people who could have that many people at one sitting. But the only reason I could do it was because I started when I had two. And, of course, that epiphany day for me turned my eating life around, and I realized that dinner was just such a bigger thing than food.
Yeah, I actually was talking to a friend today about just sitting down at the table, not necessarily having dinner, but just the act of sitting at a table and how that has become less common than it was when I was growing up. Do you find that when you're talking to parents that they are struggling to actually get to the table?
Absolutely. And when they do have dinner, we're seeing another pattern, which is very sad for the family. And yet I get it. Okay, so I want to clarify that. I get it. And that's my mission in life, is to help people through this, because I get it. But we're seeing that often a parent will come home, feed children, and then get them sort of sorted out, and then the parents will actually have dinner alone. And this is very scary for the family. Because, and I'll just give you one example. It's an example I love to use in conferences. And it happened all the time when the kids were at home. Somebody's grumpy. They're sitting at the table. And they snap at the other person in there. Oh, don't say that. Don't do that. And I got to get off the table. I got to get out of here pretty quick because I've got homework and blah, blah, blah. And they're really grumpy. And, of course, we don't know why. But somebody at the table knows why. And they go, oh, you're just mad because so-and-so broke up with you. Instantly, I have a pulse of what's going on in that kid's life. I don't have to say anything. That person can get mad. They can throw something on the floor. They can walk away. They can do whatever happens. But when everything calms down and the dishes are done, now Ron and I have an opportunity to grab a cup of tea or a glass of hot chocolate or whatever the case might be and go up to that person's room, knock, close the door, and say, what's going on? And so all of a sudden, you know, you just have the pulse of what's happening within your own family.
And it is really important, especially in the world that we all live in today. But do you think that parents are splitting up dinner time because they're partially in a rush, or also because, and I'm sure there were many picky eaters when we were children, but do you think it's because they're trying to satisfy one palate and they don't actually want to eat chicken fingers every night, so they'll feed the kids the food they'll eat and then they'll make what they like themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're dead on. That's one reason. Of course, the other reason is because they want peace. They want to be eating and digesting without, you know, running and picking up someone and putting them in their chair and having to deal with a possible temper tantrum. You know, of course, all those things are a part of it. But Helen, I need you to think of this. What has changed between now and 10 years ago, or the decade before that, or the decade before that? You know, the only thing that's changed is how we work, not how hard we work, but how we work. And so we're using our minds a lot. We've got tons of information. I can't remember, it's thousands of pieces of information before we even get to the office. So you can imagine, you know, what we're feeling. And so, yes, I think that as parents, we don't want to deal with some of these things. But what we don't understand, and I deal with this on the show all the time, and just through, you know, talking to people, of course, and families through the books, is that if you take, we call it boot camp, if you deal with it up front, you won't deal with it for the rest of the time you're rearing your children. So in other words, if you put up with that up front, you actually have years and years and years and years of pain that you're going to be going through temper tantrums and constantly feeding them chicken fingers and constantly feeding guilty. So if you up front take care of that when they're younger, yes, it's hard at first, and it is, but it saves you years and years and years of frustration.
So those parents who are listening who have, say, babies and kids just getting into toddler, and they've already kind of fall into that, what would you like to eat today? Or what would you like for dinner? Oh, you don't want that? What would you like? What do you say to them?
I think that that's a big mistake that we're making. And I get why it's happening. I really do. I remember being at the table and having the gagging reflex because I hated peas when I was a kid. I love them now. I hated them when I was a kid. And I remember my father saying, you have to eat every single thing off that plate. And, you know, and I remember that gagging reflex. So I think what's happened is we have a generation of parents who, different from the last generations where we had children because I think it was something we were supposed to do. Now people are doing it because they really want kids. They really want to have those kids. You know, they're not pressured. I mean, well, mind you, I guess I do pressure some of my older kids a little because I have one grandchild and I want more. But, for the most part, I think parents accept the fact that, hey, don't bring children into the world unless you're capable of doing everything it takes to raise them. So what happens is you've got these parents who love these children so much that they don't want that gag reflex to happen. And they don't want to do some of the things that the previous generations did. And they don't want to say, eat everything off your plate. They want to have sort of a more democratic feeling at the table. What's happening is we're letting two-year-olds dictate the health for the rest of their lives.
Right. Yes.
And so out of love, we're actually hurting our children. And we're not trying to. We just adore them. And we're not trying to do that at all. So what we have to understand is that if you offer my chocolate-loving husband a carrot stick and a piece of chocolate, guess what he's going to pick?
The carrot.
Yeah, of course he is. You know, so we have to understand that children are just little tiny adults. And if kids in India eat hot, 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 hot curry, it's not that they're made any different. We're all human beings. It's just that that's what's served.
Right.
And so here we must do the same. You know, and of course, there's little exceptions to the rules. Parents have good instincts. We had a child who didn't like onions. You can wean those allergies and not likes out pretty darn quick. I mean, you know, if you're around your children, you've got good antennas when something's real and when it's not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. A temper tantrum over food is generally not real. And I mean, we see the turnaround on our show all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talking about your show. My kids watch your show all the time. Actually, my son wishes you would come to our house.
Aww.
Isn't that kind of sad?
That might happen one day. Hey, it's not sad at all.
They love the show. They love the Food TV or Food
which
Network.
So because, wonderful.
They find it really interesting, which is kind of interesting in itself because they're 8 and 11. And it's a little odd for kids that age. My husband says, you know, I think we have the only kids who watch the Food Network. And I said, well, since they started watching the Food Network and your show, they've been more interested in cooking and they've been more interested in trying new foods because they've been exposed to it and they see kids trying foods. So then I think it helps them to see, not that they were picky at all before, but certainly they're just like every other kid if you don't expose them to it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's helped us to see that you can give it to them if they don't like it, just like if we don't like something, then you don't like it. But if you never try it, you won't know.
Exactly.
When your kids were little, did you have any sort of like one bite rule?
Absolutely. In fact, it's our claim to fame, the one bite rule. You know, we believe in it firmly. And, you know, we talk to parents, of course, that have all kinds of different methods that they use. We strongly suggest you don't go past the bite. You know, some families say, well, you need to bite for every year you are, like so 7 bites if you're 7 years old. And we don't believe in that. We believe that you should have a bite. And we also believe that if parents, in particular, when they're starting or trying to get kids out of the picky phase, and we have huge success with this, we say, look, then what you must do, other than a casserole you already know is a hit. If you know a casserole is a hit or a soup is a hit or a one pot meal is a hit, great. You can incorporate those into your meal plan. Unless it's a hit and you know it, we strongly suggest that you always, for at least 3 weeks, serve a three-part meal. So a starch, a vegetable, and then the protein. The reason we suggest that is because parents have to understand that generally kids like two of the three. And so because of that, parents can be more at peace with, okay, have one bite of the part you don't like. And then they can be a kind of at peace that the child at least isn't going to be starving. What they don't realize what they're doing, it's kind of like the magic compound interest. What happens is the child takes the bite of the meat and he eats it, or the bite of the vegetable. I had both, vegetarians and, you know, carnivores in our family, right? And what happens is they develop an appreciation for the texture, the flavor, the whatever over time. And what happens is because of that little one bite, eventually, if you accidentally slip the second bite on their plate, watch what happens. And over time, you develop children who have a really keen sense of all kinds of different likes, you know, likes for different kinds of textures and flavors and spices and so on. In fact, I even recommend that people with toddlers put a little spice right in the baby food. Right in the baby food. Yeah. I mean, again, people go, oh, isn't that bad? What if I put curry in the carrots? Isn't that going to hurt them? Of course it's not. Curry is just a little combination of spices. I'm not saying load it up, but a little.
Right. And not every child on the face of the earth eats bland food for their first year.
Well, in fact, I believe that that's a part of the problem, sort of, because what happens is the kids move from the bland food, and then all of a sudden there's this exciting world of takeout.
That is so true.
Mom and Dad have taken me to get the Goopy Burger or the chicken fingers. So it's interesting because we move from one to the other, and then we're wondering why the children then don't like something that's somewhere in the middle. Well, why go back? My goodness. You know, so the restaurants and the takeout places, they know this. I mean, the reason we go back to those places is because the food tastes so darn good. Why? It's full of fat, sugar, and salt.
Right.
So at home, it's okay to have a little fat or sugar or salt, usually and hopefully not three together. But if you don't have salt, you're probably going to sweeten something maybe with a little honey or whatever. And you can choose and select those ingredients at home where you can't when you're out. You know, and so of course kids don't want to go back. They go right from bland to wow.
That is so true. You know, when I was preparing to speak to you, we went to our community of parents who frequent the message boards on CanadianParents.com, and they were all very excited to know that I would be talking to you. So I asked them if they had any questions that they'd like me to pass on to you, and a few of them did. But I wanted to mention one post that was on the board, and I thought it was rather interesting because this mom is obviously somebody who came from a no cooking background, but through a little bit of good luck, she was able to turn things around. And her name's Joanne on the board. And what she posted was, Sandy Richards is awesome. Her cookbook, Life's on Fire, Cooking for the Rush, taught me how to cook. So she goes on to explain basically the history of her becoming a cook.
Okay, you're going to make me cry.
So for people who are listening, you can see her whole story on CanadianParents.com. But just to summarize, she said when her and her husband got married, she didn't even know how to cook a potato. And she said that she needed a recipe to make a tossed salad. And then one day she happened to be going through a pile of books at a bookstore and came across your first, The Life's on Fire was your first book, right?
Right.
And she took it home. She read it cover to cover and found that the layout and the recipes were all really easy for her to use. And she basically says that if it wasn't for that book, she would still be looking for recipes for tossed salads.
So
I thought you would enjoy that.
Thank you. I never get sick of hearing that.
Your cookbooks are very easy to use. I know for me, having a picture for every recipe is really important. I'm really visual, so there are a lot of recipe books that don't have pictures, and it's almost like you need to have a fair amount of food knowledge in order to pick a recipe, because you don't always know like how the flavors are all going to be. But if you're a bit visual and you look at a picture, you can kind of get an idea of texture in that.
Well, and for me, another key reason why the pictures were important, and in fact, we had a very tough time getting a photographer at first. We had somebody gutsy enough to take us on because we wouldn't allow a food stylist in the room. So we didn't want anything fake about the pictures. We said, look, if it's ugly, you should know that ahead of time because you don't want to entertain with it.
Yeah, that is a good point.
It may taste great, but you better know it's ugly. And so, you know, we firmly believe that people eat with their eyes first. We hear it all the time. I mean, you hear it when you go out to restaurants. So why wouldn't we eat with our eyes at our home?
Right.
So what's interesting about what you just said is this. When I work with families to do meal planning, okay, whether it's on the show or when, you know, people would hire me to do that prior to that, the very first thing I did was I would say, look, I'm not necessarily, because the first part was getting them to give me their recipes so that I could incorporate those into their plan. But what I would do is I'd bring my books along and I'd say, I don't want you here while I'm with the kids. Kids, point to me the pictures you'll eat. And the parents would come back and they'd go, get out of here. There's no way my kid will eat that. And I'll go, really? They picked it. They're buying into this meal. They see it. They think it looks good. And parents are shocked that when kids buy into a meal, they'll generally eat it. And they're shocked. I can't tell you how many bazillion people are shocked by that realization. So even though in an industry where it's getting very competitive, and where you feel sick to your stomach a little bit because the books have to be a little more expensive because you're doing photography, it's worth it and will never change.
Yeah, and that is such a good point because often you'll put something down on the table. The child doesn't know what it is, especially if it's something new. They don't know what the taste is. They don't even know the texture because most of them are too young to really know by first glance.
Of course.
But they'll often look and go, I don't like that.
Absolutely.
So it's a great idea to pull out the cookbooks when you're putting together your meal plan and get them to visually decide what looks appealing to them.
Absolutely.
That's
another cool part that we have that we didn't have years ago, and I really suggest families do this, is the pictures of the meals the kids have liked or that they have tried, you know, that are not in our books. Of course, we use our books as tools, but I encourage people to use all kinds of cookbooks. So if you try a meal and you love that meal, we have digital cameras now. We have photocopiers that can photocopy pictures in a second if we want them to. We just have to plug our camera into the computer. So I strongly suggest that you get involved with your kids and make it almost like a project, not something where you need to spend 8 hours every Saturday. I mean one at a time. You know, make the meal, kid liked it. Wow, take a picture of the kid eating it. Take a picture of the plate. Print it off on your computer, hole punch it, throw it in a book beside the recipe. What happens is two things. One, the child can point to that and say, yeah, let's have that. Remember we had that and it was so good? So you've got the child buying into the meal. And number two, you've got a copy of a recipe. And as the child gets older and older and older, they will learn how to make that recipe. And you're giving them that gift of independence.
Oh, I love that idea. I did an interview with a scrapbooking publisher in the States recently, and one tip she shared with me I thought was great, and I think it fits in really well with your idea of taking a picture of a recipe they like. She actually names recipes for family members. So it would be like Chase's chicken
or that's so smart.
Or like their aunt or their, and I think that's such a cool idea because it's almost like it makes it
personalizes it.
Yeah. That, and if you have, especially if you have a child who might be a bit picky, if they finally catch on to something they like, name it, photograph it, and then it, you have a surefire hit in your
absolutely
cookbook. That's that's
absolutely
awesome. So I have a couple questions from the community. A few of them kind of stood out as questions that maybe a few people posted, but most people think of. And one of them I mentioned earlier on how I have this meal plan, but it actually didn't work for me today. So one lady by the name of Wendy posted that she has a meal plan and she has one on a regular basis, but she has a really hard time sticking to it. Why does that happen?
Well, there's probably two good reasons. And the first reason is having a meal plan is one thing. The reason for a meal plan is the most important thing. And the reason for a meal plan is to make sure every drop of groceries is in the house. A psychologist that I read, you know, and started this whole thing for me, you know, many, many years ago, said something very interesting. You don't take out the chicken unless you know you've got everything to go with it. Because then our brains are so overwhelmed. We just go, okay, oh yeah, the chicken. Oh yeah, but I forgot to get the tomato soup that goes in the recipe. Oh, okay, and so our brain starts to. So the meal plan is only a vehicle to get the food in the house. That's what a meal plan is for. It's for nothing else.
Right. So if you have
to get the groceries in the house.
Right. And if you have the groceries in the house,
okay,
things like not getting the food out of the freezer and you get, it's like 4 o'clock. Oh, geez, I was going to make sausages, but they're in the freezer. I forgot to take them out. Do you really need to build that into your meal plan on Tuesday, take out sausages? Or
absolutely. Absolutely. And I also strongly recommend backup meals that are easy to do. So first I'll address the first one. Absolutely. A part of your night regime must always be to look at the recipe the next day. It does a couple of things. You lay out the recipe for everybody to look at the next day, which is kind of cool because anybody, especially anyone who's really being health conscious for whatever reason, we always hope we all are, but for whatever reason, they get to look at what they're having. The family buys into the meal. The recipe is out on the counter if you've got teens or if you have even, you said you have two kids, 8 and 11, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they are old enough to even pull out equipment and different things like that. So what it does is it familiarizes the family with what you're having and how they can participate. More important when you do that the night before, it reminds you, oh, this is a slow cooker meal. I have a 5-minute prep to do tonight. Or, oh, okay, we're having chicken tomorrow. I forgot to take out the breast. And you will take out those breasts if you use the meal plan for what it's for, and that is the purpose of getting groceries in the house.
Right.
Yeah. And so those are two things that I strongly recommend, and it was a great thing that you brought up. Like, should you incorporate that into the night? Absolutely. What a fabulous question to ask, because a meal plan means we're planning what the meals are. And so the night before, it only takes 2 seconds, and your brain doesn't have to deal through 8 million pieces of information because you already know you've got the groceries in the house for the main event.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, one of our users by the name of Allie wants to know how you sneak veggies into your kids. Is it a good idea to sneak them in?
Absolutely. You do anything you can. And I have a personal experience with this myself. I mean, I have two kids that absolutely hated vegetables. They wouldn't look at vegetables. They screamed, hollered, ranted, raved, had a fit. I made them have a one-bite rule. I had to chill out about it. You know, I would say you can plug your nose, though. You know, if you plug your nose and then if you take a bite and you chew on it and then you take a drink of milk really quick, it's over. And the persistence really helps because it is the texture we want them to get used to, okay? There's something about the texture that's bothering them, which is not surprising. A lot of the food that we get that's convenient does not have the same texture as vegetables or some meats, you know,
right,
when you're just having meat, the same thing. Textures are very different. Okay. And it's usually texture that bothers a child more than it is the actual item or the taste. You know, the taste of the ingredient. It's usually the texture that bugs them.
Right. Do you think parents get hooked on having to eat a cooked vegetable over a raw vegetable?
No, they should not worry about that. And what a great question. I always say, don't make a second meal, though. So if you're having, for example, in our upcoming book, we've got this one recipe where we've got snap peas and we toss them in a little bit of soy sauce and lemon pepper, and they're really yummy and they stay crunchy. One test family came back and said, you know what? I just had half in the bowl raw and I did the other half that way. Is that okay? Absolutely, because you're not making a double meal.
Right.
You know, so when you're not making a double meal and the vegetables are suited as raw, go for it. No problem. But getting back to the hiding them, there's certain vegetables I do say, go ahead and hide them most of the time just so you know that they're getting it in their bodies. But for the most part, you really do want them to try and get that texture and chew on that and get used to that feeling of what that vegetable or meat is.
Right.
Or protein or whatever it is you're dealing with.
And that one bite rule will help.
That one bite rule really does it. Really does it. And getting the kids, for picky eaters, the biggest thing is getting your family to buy into the meal.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone picks. And therefore, everyone starts to become cooperative of what the other person picked because they got their way too.
Right. That's an awesome idea. Okay. I have one last question. The community, and I think generally people want to find ways to maybe get back to the basics with food. I think we're trying to get rid of takeout foods and fast food, and even eat foods that are maybe a little healthier, less chemicals, less salt.
Yes.
How do you suggest we get back to the basics?
Well, and again, another great question, and my answer is probably going to be shocking. I think that we can't get back to the basics until we start with baby steps. And because we are a society that everything is automatic, you know, I mean, my goodness, I have people on the show that bragged or cried at the fact that they had menus on the internet and that all they had to do was pull up this one file and boom, they could order pizza. So we live in an automatic society. We are trading our health for time. That's really what parents are doing. They love their children so much. They're trying to get a little bit of time. And so unfortunately, they're going, oh, okay, this time. I'm just going to get takeout this time because they want the time. That's really why we're eating poorly. So what we have to do is we have to start with baby steps. And we have to ignore all the million pieces of information that everybody says, oh, don't have tomato sauce in it again because it's got salt. Well, you know what? If you're ordering pizza, let me tell you, you have no idea how much salt you're eating. So we have to train families to start with baby steps. And we have to say, look, if mom used to can it, that's how I want you to think. If grandma used to do it, use that as a helper. If grandma used to make jam, hey, that might be a great helper. If grandma used to make tomato sauce or can her tomatoes or do those sorts of things, those are great helpers. As soon as we start getting into a lot of the dehydrated or packaged, dry packaged things, you're looking at a lot more sodium, preservatives, etc. to package those things. You need less of that when you are looking at something that's canned, something that great-grandma used to do or grandma used to do or mom, depending on what generation you're from. So use those helpers to speed up your cooking process. The more you feel empowered to cook for your family, guess what happens? You start being a little more conscious and you start saying, well, you know, man, I did do this and so I could probably do this. And it's an evolution. It just happens. And it gets easier and easier and easier. The big problem that families face, and I bleed for them because I remember I've been there and I see it in my work all the time, is that they feel guilty about everything. They're trying to be everything and do everything for everyone. And you just can't. You got to start somewhere. You know, you got to start somewhere. Use those helpers, speed up the cooking process, and then gradually learn more and more, decide what are the things you can do and what are the things you can't do that you don't have time for, and be at peace with that. You're a lot healthier than eating out all the time.
Great advice. Oh, thanks very much for joining us today, Sandy. Please keep us posted on your new book, Dinner Survival. We'll all look forward to surviving dinner with the help of that book. For more information on today's podcast, visit mumtalk.ca. And to learn more about meal planning, visit Canada Cooks on CanadianParents.com, where you will find Sandy's step-by-step approach to fixing dinner.